Hey, do you remember the adventures of Pete and Pete? Hello, and welcome to Hey, Do You Remember, a show where we reminisce about a movie or TV series we grew up with, then take off the rose-tinted glasses to see how it holds up. I'm Chris.
I'm Donna.
And I'm Carlos.
And today we're revisiting the adventures of Pete and Pete. Okay, so before we get started with the show, our regularly scheduled programming, a couple episodes back, I asked you guys to leave us reviews on iTunes, and if you could find a way to work in one of the running jokes from the show, that we would read those parts of the review on a future episode. So I've got two here that have come in that I adore, and I cannot wait to share. So the reason I don't want to read the whole review is... I thought it would just feel like us, like, patting ourselves on the back too much, and that's why I was just gonna...
We're great.
But these are really... These are both...
They're so nice.
I mean, I wrote both of them, so...
Oh, okay, well, these are very well written. There's a lot of praise for Carlos.
It's strange. Carlos, Chris and Donner there, and then Carlos is the same.
So the first one, I believe, is... I mean, this has to be from... That guy Michael, the musician that wrote to us, sent us that really, really nice message.
Yeah, no.
It might be Michael.
Yeah.
His music is amazing.
Yeah, and the Nick Moss band, if you guys want to check it out. It is really good. I offhandedly mentioned the name of that band to one of my friends, and they were like, whoa, 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 whoa. The Nick Moss. And I was like, oh.
Wow. I guess so.
Like, I am happy to give them a shout out, but it kind of feels like they do not need it.
Yeah.
They're doing very, very well. We're just some rinky-dink little podcast here. But
it's a small world.
Yeah, I appreciated the message he sent us. I appreciate this review. This is really great. So, I'm going to skip the first part of it just because I don't want it to feel like, you know, we're just blowing ourselves here. But
oh, man.
Okay, so here's the part.
Carlos is imagining himself blowing himself.
Oh, can I also say that the part of this review that I liked was when he talked about how even when he doesn't agree with us, that instead of, like, you know, instead of that turning him off and the way that it actually engages him more, I really liked that part of the review. So thank you, Michael. We really, really like this. Okay, so...
You're wrong.
I feel that way, too, when Chris and Carlos are wrong.
This all started with Ghostbusters 2.
Yeah.
The best Ghostbusters.
Okay, so... All right, here's the relevant part. The relevant part for our purposes here today. I'm on the road over 200 days a year. It can be like living in a box at times. Which I think that comes from Masters of the Universe.
Are you living in a box?
Yeah, in a cardboard box.
So from the band, are we living in a cardboard box? Is the name of the band?
I think it's just, so are we living in a box? They hadn't even specified cardboard. They didn't even know. Okay, so that was the first part of his review. This next one, I have to read the entire thing. I have to. This one is so fucking funny. This is the thing I didn't consider when I proposed this, though. I said we would give these listeners a shout out, but I had forgotten to take into account that on iTunes I can only read screen names.
Yeah.
So Michael's that I figured out because he's on the road. He's a musician. That must be.
And he's told us that he's been on the road.
Right. So that must be Michael.
Here. Yeah.
This one, I'm not sure who did this, but I love you so hard. This is the screen name is Soccer Mom, so you can probably see where this is going. I love this so much. Okay. I heard tidbits about this podcast from Karen, another mom at my son's soccer practice. Not sure who she heard it from, but I had to check these out for myself. Unlike a certain offspring scissor kicks, this podcast did not let me down. If you've ever wanted to share a fond childhood movie with your own children, obtained the film reels, then found yourself flogging your in-home projectionist for ruining your bonding moment with a dated subpar shadow of what you remember, you need this podcast. Let Chris, Donna, and Carlos help you navigate the nostalgia to see which movies still hold up if they ever did. There is a bit of risque recollection in these reviews, which may not be appropriate for anyone.
Aye, tis true.
But provides scandalous entertainment along the sidelines while pouring the Gatorade. Karen, thank you.
Awesome.
I love this so much. If somebody wants to take credit for that, send us a message. I'll give you a proper shout out.
Everybody wants to take credit.
On another episode. That one, I that was amazing. Seriously, thank you guys so much for writing the reviews. If anybody else is feeling particularly inspired now after hearing those, we'll continue to read them on the show as we get them. But yeah, that makes me so, so happy. You guys have no idea. That made me so happy.
I can't wait to wait till I get one from Macaulay Culkin, Chris Schrader.
No, please don't. No. No more friendship ponies.
I like the friendship pony.
Yeah, right. This is my favorite podcast.
That sounds a lot like my Dick Tracy radio serial.
It's you from the past.
We've got Teenage Donna. Oh my God.
You fool.
I think the L is silent.
Fool.
Yeah. Okay, so here we go. The Adventures of Pete and Pete started out as a series of minute-long shorts that would run on Nickelodeon in between other shows. There were 24 in all, and due to their popularity, 5 half-hour specials were subsequently produced. When those were also successful, a full series was commissioned. The show only ran for 3 seasons, but the impact and influence it had on its fans cannot be overstated. The offbeat tone, quirky humor, and single-cam setup put it in stark contrast against other children's shows from the same era. There had never been anything quite like it, and it's probably fair to say that its cancellation marked an overall shift in Nickelodeon's programming. There are a multitude of reasons Pete and Pete continues to resonate so strongly. For those of us that discovered it at just the right age, it was one of the first shows that didn't just reflect the zeitgeist, it actually informed it to some degree. Each of us is going to highlight a different episode that sticks out in our minds, but first, let's talk overall memories. Donna, what do you remember about The Adventures of Pete and Pete?
I remember loving Pete and Pete. I loved it. I absolutely loved it. And I was a little confused by it.
Sure.
As you said, it was different.
Yeah.
So, I remember pretty vividly. I had this, we had this teeny tiny mustard-colored TV in the basement, which is why I would watch MTV and things that I wasn't supposed to watch, because they were like, oh, nothing comes in down there, and she doesn't want to watch a tiny TV. I was like, I have no problem with tiny TVs, and I know just how to work that antenna, so
Hold
I'll just be
up.
In the basement. Yeah.
There's no subtext there. Moving on.
She knows just how to work that antenna.
Yeah. Anyway, I was down there watching MTV one day, and Pete and Pete, and I remember the shorts. I didn't until you said it, and I was like, oh yeah, it was just like a year-long preview.
When is this movie coming out?
Oh, this is going to be awesome.
But I feel like I've seen all of it.
They were super weird, and I remember like having those regular questions, like, but why are both of their names Pete? And how does one of them have tattoos? You're just not going to get an answer for. And the show was just like, yeah, we're just not going to give you an answer. And I was like, oh, art form.
Doesn't one of the shorts explain where Petunia comes from? Isn't it a Mother's Day?
I mean, she just shows up, really.
He got it for his mom.
I don't know. Maybe it was shorts.
Would have to watch it again.
Yeah, the shorts.
I remember there being. I know that there's an episode about Petunia.
Yeah.
I don't remember what the story was.
Everything was always that just like one day she just showed up.
Or something.
You're right. That's pretty much how most of these elements are.
One day it went away.
Yeah. It was like, okay. I remember being like really weird, but I really liked it. I didn't see it for 100 years.
I have not watched it since the mid-90s until we looked at it for the show.
I watched it about a year ago.
I remember you telling me.
They were on Netflix, and I was
Oh, because you even said, we got to get on this. We should do this for the show.
This has been one we've been wanting to do for a while.
It's in there. It's in there.
Carlos, what about you?
Nickelodeon in the early to mid-90s is maybe like the most cherished part of my childhood. So many programs that I watched, like SNICK and Nicktoons and
Stick Stickly
and Wienerville.
Wienerville.
The Alex Mack and Pete and Pete. is definitely a part of that. I remember the shorts. I don't remember the plot to any of them, but I know that they exist. Mm. And so much of this I didn't remember until we watched it again. I was like, oh, yeah. My God. And then it was like it had never left. Like the thing with their mom having a metal plate in her head. Mm. If you would ask me, I would not have been able to tell you anything special about their mother. Mm-hmm. But as soon as he said it, like, oh, yeah, that's totally like it's a major plot point to a lot of different stories.
Yeah.
But I did remember, obviously, the episode that I brought today. That one sticks out in my head because I remember there being a sort of a build up to it on Nickelodeon, mm-hmm. like, because it was kind of like an end of summer airing for it. Mm-hmm. And it's about the end of the summer. So.
Right.
But yeah, just I remember not being able to appreciate it at the time, but I remember just being challenged with the show, like, mm-hmm. so much absurdity and mythos. You're like, you have to just accept that Artie is the strongest man in the world, sure. because why not? And now I watch a lot of like Disney Channel and stuff. I have kids. So, you know, if you leave the Disney Channel on past say like maybe 10 in the morning, it switches to like tween television,
yeah.
which is what basically we were watching with Pete and Pete. This new crop of it is the worst. It's all
dog
shot.
With a blog.
Yeah, right. Which then, yes. Yeah, dog that's with a blog is a real show. Show. It's about a dog who can talk and has a blog. That's a real thing.
I bet that is.
And it's very
serious. Oh, what a great opportunity for like mixed media, because then can you go online and read his blog?
I doubt it.
Oh, those no. fucking idiots.
I don't
idiots.
Know. Hey, kids, ask your mom if you can read the dog with a blog's blog, dog, blog. but then you know what ends up happening is you start picking out which ones are the best ones of this crap. Mm. And you start going, like, you start finding little gems. But,
so what's your favorite?
Well, of this, like, Nickelodeon.
Can I guess?
Yeah.
Of the best of the worst Disney shows?
It's Disney and Nickelodeon both make them the same way. They look exactly the same.
I don't know that I know as many of the Nickelodeon ones, but there was a weekend where like the only thing that was coming in on cable at this place I was staying was Disney Channel. So I don't know the name of the show. Maybe it is Jesse.
Oh yeah,
that's the main. Is that
that's the one where it's like a nanny who watches children of
right.
all ethnicities
sure.
who have no parents. That one's watchable in terms like comparatively.
She's gonna be fucking hot.
She probably already is. A lot of the ones that you think like when she gets old enough,
she's already.
They're usually like 23.
I just remember that was like when before Hilary Duff was Hilary Duff when she was just Lizzie McGuire.
Yeah,
it was sort of like oh boy
when she grows up.
When
we were in high school, when it was totally legal to say so, and I was like maybe 15 and she was 14.
Yeah,
we're like this woman will be the most amazing woman in the world, and then that did not happen.
I worked with a guy who had a crush on Hilary Duff, but it was so strange, like, that he would always talk about it as if it were his friend. He's like, oh yeah, this friend of mine, he spends like entire weekends just watching Lizzie McGuire. And the first couple times he tells you stuff like this, you go like, ha, your friend's a real loser. And then he's like, oh yeah, he entered this contest to meet her.
Oh no.
And at a certain point, I was like, your friend is you. This got weird.
That's you.
And he walks out of the bathroom like bleeding, like, my friend totally carved Lizzie McGuire into his arm. I need to take the rest of the day off, so I'm lightheaded.
Oh my God.
But no, my favorite of this batch has been iCarly. It's my.
Oh, I knew that.
iCarly.
You got?
Best.
Didn't you have iCarly bed sheets?
No.
What?
I have an iCarly comforter. It's a comforter.
Sleeping bag.
Oh yeah, you jackass with a sheet.
They don't sell iCarly. They don't sell iCarly bed sheets in a queen size because grown ups don't have iCarly bed sheets.
Grown ups, I hate to break it to you.
I feel like we should amend that. We're like, I watch the Disney Channel. I have kids. You having kids has nothing to do with you watching the Disney Channel.
It never had anything to do with me watching Nickelodeon, but the Disney Channel was its own thing, to be fair. Yeah, we don't challenge kids like this anymore with shows like this and shows like Are You Afraid of the Dark, frankly, where we're too afraid to scare children or make them think about absurd things.
Mm-hmm.
And it's Pete and Pete.
World.
Yeah.
Think about some.
I mean, I'm sure this is bound to come up later in the episode, or was going to, I should say. But I mean, to me, even just the three episodes we watched, And that, which made me think about other episodes of the show and stuff. And it's like, this may sound silly, but there are like these existential questions that are raised in each of these episodes mm-hmm. that even though they're played for laughs, you know, and there is a moment in every single episode where it goes off the rails with, you know, in terms of absurdity, like in mm-hmm. a big, bad way. Like the whole overall tone is a little absurd, but there's always a moment in every episode where it's just like, boom, we're off planet now. Like it's, we're way out there. Mm-hmm. And even in the, but even in that stuff, like the, yeah, it just, it, I think there are, when you watch this as a kid, it makes you think about things that even if you're not necessarily aware what the question is as you watch it, like, it does start the wheels turning. It does, like, it maybe, like, it stuff starts to resonate with you and you don't exactly know why quite yet, but it is thought provoking in a way that most kids shows are not. And even, and you know, it's easy to shit on like the ones that exist now, but this was also true of when we were kids. This was, this was kind of a standout even when we were kids.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, it's true. And I think, the older Pete being the narrator informs a lot of that, because we're following a kid who's transitioning in life, going from like one phase to another. And a lot, I found a lot of it to be a lot of like the fleeting nature of like childhood and questions that, you know, you don't really ask until you're starting to become an adult. And it's so,
there was so much stuff in these, and again, just these three where it was just, it made me think about like, oh, that was a really huge deal for me as a kid. That's something I haven't thought about in 20 years, but that was, that huge. Was huge. Yeah. Huge, huge things.
How about you? What do you remember?
What do I remember? Okay, so I had a few friends that were really into this, like, pretty much from the get-go. It feels like they were aware of it. Like, I remember hearing about Pete and Pete for a while before I saw it. And what I'm guessing is they were also, they were watching the shorts and the specials. And I feel like, this may be wrong, but in my memory, there was just a whole summer of Pete and Pete where I feel like I watched every episode at least twice. Mm-hmm. Like, it just not as they were airing, but just when they would, you know, like I knew at this time there were going to be two of them back to back, and just that every day. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I saw most of the show that way. This is a really like early example of something that informed my sense of humor, maybe to a larger degree than I was even aware of. But, you know, going back and looking at it, going like, oh, well, that's where that came from. That's where my appreciation of that sort of thing came from. Mm-hmm. Even down to like the storytelling, like the way, like a way that you think the story is about one thing, and then all of a sudden we're on a completely different plot thread, and then maybe we'll come back to this other thing, and just that it just it was just complicated in a way I wasn't used to for this kind of a show. It was also one of the first shows that felt really genuine in the way that it was like speaking to me, and it like, just sort of the right combination of highbrow and lowbrow. And mostly it's that it, I remember that it's a show that did not treat me like an idiot.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And it felt like it was for me. Like, right around the same time, I was also discovering music that felt like it was just for me. And, like, these things are a big deal when you're 10, 11, 12, you know, however old you are when you're discovering this. And it was also maybe one of the first times it felt kind of cool to be in on something that not everybody got. Because there were a lot of kids that thought it was too strange or too stupid, and they just didn't get it.
They didn't get it.
Yeah. And normally, when you're on the other side of that, I hate being told, like, oh, you just didn't get it. Especially when you've just listed several, you know, very well-thought-out reasons of why something doesn't work for you. Oh, you just didn't get it. Trust me, I get Transformers. It's dog shit. Like, we don't need to have that conversation.
That's me in David Lynch movies. Like, guys, I get it. I get it.
it's just
stupid.
But it's just not for you. And there were and there were kids that felt that way about Pete and Pete. And I'm sure my parents didn't get it either. And that also made it cooler.
Yes.
Like it just it felt like, okay, you're speaking my language. And it made it feel more personal. And yet, as I said, I have not rewatched it since the mid-90s. So even though this is something that played a huge part in laying the foundation, you know, for what I would find funny, the specifics of it have grown hazier and hazier over time. But I think there's actually like value in that, remembering something, like in more of a general sense than like down to like the nitty gritty details of it. And that's actually ties into why I picked the episode I did. That's going to come up later. And I've always said this about the show. and I don't know that a lot of people would agree with this, but for me, this is something that is sort of a precursor to Arrested Development, just mm-hmm. in terms of memorable recurring characters, like side characters,
yes.
the way it calls back to previous jokes. Like even in these episodes, in my episode, which chronologically was the one to air the latest, calls back to your episode. Mm-hmm. There's a callback to something from that episode.
Yeah.
The way that the mythology became more dense and more intricate, like over time.
Yeah.
And just, yeah, the style of storytelling, actually, and totally superficially, the photo booth, reminded me of the banana stand.
Yeah, oh, yeah. That's true. Yeah.
Standalone.
Okay, well, hey, with all that said, we just looked at it with fresh eyes, so let's see how The Adventures of Pete and Pete holds up. All right, so first, Carlos, you are going to take us through which episode?
And I have it on my phone, which is charging, but I think it's called What We Did on Our Summer Vacation.
Yeah. Yes. Well, so before you take
Ice Cream Guy.
Ice Cream Guy. Before you take the lead on this, I just want to mention really quick, this is actually one of the 30-minute specials. This was one of the 5 specials,
right.
which was later repurposed as an actual episode they put the opening credits
See,
in.
I remember there being the build-up to this. That's exactly why it probably sticks out.
And that's why it feels like the formula is there, but it's maybe not exactly... Because I think this is one of the rare times, you guys correct me if I'm wrong, where older Pete... narrating is actually where it cuts to him sitting there actually talking to the camera versus, and as it went on, it becomes more voiceover, I think.
Right.
I think, and here's the other thing. So like I mentioned, I haven't watched this in a long, long time. So aside from these 3 episodes, I know there must be like a rabid cult following for this show. So if people that are maybe new to our podcast that are maybe checking this out just because they saw that we did Pete and Pete, I may say things that are wrong and I apologize. I may get little details wrong because I'm not like super fanatical about it.
Yeah.
Like
I kind of thought that he stayed narrating. Like
No. He stayed.
Shoot to.
Oh, okay.
He kept being it like, just, touch it, and like.
It stuck out to me.
About my brother Pete.
Maybe you're right. It just stuck out to me that in the other 2 that we watched, it was just voiceover that was not cut to him.
Right, whereas this episode starts with him like sitting on
He's talking to us, and then it keeps cutting back to him sitting on the car talking directly into the camera. Which I just, but maybe they do.
I don't know.
Continue all that.
Yeah, before we said the words Pete and Pete, all that ever came to my mind was the episode I'm bringing forth for you people. Just the, Artie, the strongest man in the world, obviously.
Sure.
A villain who was all covered in paper cuts, who gave paper cuts.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Oh, I can feel the synapses in my brain lighting up.
Another villain.
Dust them off.
Another villain called Pit Stain.
Yeah.
Who had, massive pit stains. And, oh, damn it. What is the name of the girl? Ellen? Is that her name?
Mm-hmm.
Just saying, I am a dot. I am a dot.
Oh, that was almost, that was a strong contender for Day of the Dot was.
I couldn't even tell you what that episode's about. I just remember her just saying, I am a dot.
Do you remember when Artie leaves the show in season 3 and Michelle Trachtenberg is, I know she gets bumped up to, in the opening credits and her dad is played by Iggy Pop.
No.
Yeah.
And I wanted to pick an episode with Iggy Pop in it, but again, the season 3 episodes are not as potent for me as. You know, the first season is mostly what I think both of ours are from the first season.
Yeah, I chose
I think yours is the first episode and mine's the last.
Mm-hmm.
So this episode opens up with Pete. I'm not even going to tell you which one. It's the older one. It's the older Pete. Who we also saw in Home Alone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Both of them. Talking about how you know... when summer is ending and everyone has their own markers, which as a kid, you totally do.
Even the stuff he was saying, some of it was like, oh yeah. And then it made me think
like my friend Ellen says, you know, when summer's ending, when you have to choose between a 3-ring binder or a spiral notebook, it's like, oh my God. Yeah. When you go shopping for.
Yeah. Oh, for me, it was when the ads would start running in August for all the chain stores about like the back to school sales. It was like, oh no, I've still got like,
that's like a good
so 2 weeks left. Come on. There's still so much summer.
And then, but then they cut to Artie and little Pete, who fight the ocean.
That was amazing. What a great cutaway.
Oh, good.
And they're not just fighting the ocean because they can win.
No, they're just fighting it.
Just because they're angry that summer has to end. Yeah. And that is such a childhood feeling. And it's now that I know what a polar vortex is, it's an adult feeling.
I will get you.
I will beat that lake.
They're really doing it too. They're not like, oh, maybe I'll fight the ocean. No, they're
kind of. I mean, if the strongest man in the world can't do it, what chance does little Pete have?
I mean, but he's there.
He's really making a go of it. Yeah, that was like he's committed. Right away. I loved this because I was like, that was the first cutaway, and I was just like, oh, that's amazing. Yeah. That's
amazing. And so this episode is all set in a summer, and.
Are you taking umbrage? Did you not? Fact checker Donna.
Did you not follow that part?
Well,
Bane? Oh, Bane, our fact checker. I love it. Let's hear.
It was actually a summer in the hills.
Oh, man.
Here all night.
So, we cut from how you know summer's going to end to how you know summer really began. And the first day of true summer to all the children in the neighborhood is when the ice cream man comes on the first warm day, or the first very hot day of June.
Yeah.
The ice cream man's name, Mr.
Tasty.
Tasty. I always want to call him Mr. Frosty. You know, whatever. Mr. Tasty, who is absurdly just a guy with a giant plastic ice cream soft serve.
There's a great build up to this too, because they just show it from his point of view talking to the kids.
Yeah.
And so you're waiting to see what he looks like, and you can tell something's going, because even the voice sounds like
it's in something.
Yeah. So there's like a build up to it. And then when they actually show it, it's kind of like, oh, this could be an Are You Afraid of the Dark episode. Yeah, this is a little unsettling.
His voice is so, like, gentle, but that sometimes is, like, it betrays his, like, gentleness and is kind of creepy.
I don't want to spoil the whole thing about the point of the episode of not knowing who it is, but I am 90% sure it's the same guy that plays Artie, playing Mr. Tasty.
That's an interesting theory.
I kind of, well, at first when they showed Artie, because I had never thought about who played Artie, the strongest man in the world, because Artie is Artie. Everyone knows that. But when they first showed him, I was like, is that Tom Kenny? But it's not.
Oh, no.
It's not. But then it started me thinking, like, maybe Tom Kenny is Mr. Tasty. But that's just because I think Tom Kenny is.
I'm not saying in the world of the show that Artie is Mr. Tasty. I'm just saying I think that it might be the same actor.
Right.
I think.
So the first.
I thought it was me.
Man, that would have been amazing.
He takes off.
I have here a blue hair cake for you. You eat it, and then you have my permission to die.
This is like Nolan picks Bane out of some obscure reference from Pete and Pete. That'd be awesome.
That would be amazing. That's awesome. So he's a hero to the neighborhood kids, and why wouldn't he be? Because he's an ice cream man, and he gives out the best ice cream, and everyone loves him, but no one really knows him. He's just the ice cream guy, which, as a kid, you don't ask the ice cream man, like, how's the wife?
Yeah.
You don't know anything about your ice cream man that comes through, except that he probably is not allowed that close to children.
Oh, yeah, this is in my notes. This made me think about, so we had the regular ice cream man that would come through the neighborhood that we all knew and was parent approved. He had the truck and the, you know, whatever. There was another guy in a red minivan.
Oh, no.
And we were not to buy ice cream from him.
Hey, can you want to buy some ice cream? Can you just go in the back of my van? Get in the van! Yeah, oh, Jesus. Which is actually a lot like the other ice cream guy in this episode, who was super
creepy.
Who
is Michael Stipe from REM. Yeah.
But super creepy, weird speech patterns.
Well, I mean, I think that's kind of the point, too. Yes. Sort of the anti-Mr. Tasty.
Right, that Mr. Tasty is above all of these.
This is sort of the consequences of...
Right. Mr. Tasty is like, this is a calling in his life, that he was an ice cream man.
Oh, yeah.
And every other ice cream guy, it's like, this is their job.
We didn't have ice cream men on our
street. Where the hell did you grow up?
I was on a cul-de-sac in Danville, Illinois.
Hmm.
And, But right. It was like maybe like three times in our young lives there would be like, you know, maybe like a guy on a bike with like the oh, cooler yeah. in front.
Oh,
know,
okay.
The, like,
okay.
Ice cream thing. And it was like so much excitement. I mean, we would lose our absolute bananas with that.
You really misplaced a lot of bananas as a kid.
Where did my bananas go? My absolute bananas. They're vodka-drenched bananas.
Lose them. You know, and it was like, we were a bunch of kids my age on the street, and we would always be playing outside, and I remember, like, the three times that it happened, it was like, yeah, absolute banana losing. Like, get out! Stop eating dinner! Get out here! Oh my god, yeah. There's an ice cream man! Like, and we gave him business. I don't know why he didn't come back, but it was a huge deal.
My kid is trained to hear the little bells of the paletta guy. She's like, paletta? Like, no, go to sleep. It's 2 in the morning. I don't know why he's ringing those bells. He's drunk. Go back to bed.
That's the bike with the cooler in front of it. That's definitely a city thing. There's so much of that.
Oh, yeah.
Around here.
Yeah, so many carts. And that's how you know summer's coming. Mm. For me, it's when the elote guy comes. Like the guy who sells corn.
Please, you know, there's a, okay. Yeah. I mean, there's adult versions of this too. When we used to go out drinking at the Ashland. The burrito, or the, what was it? What am I thinking of?
Tamale.
Yeah. I mean, it's the same, it's the exact same reaction as when you're a kid and it's ice cream. It's just, when you're drunk and it's like, tamales.
You wait outside the bar?
Take just all my money.
I must be drunk. Okay, give me tamales.
There's a guy like that in Logan Square who just makes a ton of money going from bar to bar.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's how you know summer's here, for sure. Anywho, this episode. So the kids enjoy his ice cream, and he takes pictures and gets them developed at the photo booth where Ellen works, which is like a standalone booth that they don't exist anymore.
No,
at all.
And this used to be there.
That was a thing. That was a thing. Sears used to have one in Chicago, up on like Lawrence, and you could also get your keys made there.
I remember the key. Yeah, they had standalone key ones too, of just keys. But
used to be Sears.
Oh, that was a thing. So he gets some photos developed at the photo booth, and Ellen sees that it's just tasty. Like, that's just the name on the envelope. All question marks and everything else because there's no other information. And she decides she has to look at these photos. And Pete and Ellen are looking at all these photos, and it's just Mr. Tasty still with the helmet on.
This is another creepy part.
He's always taking photos as Mr. Tasty, not as, you know, Rick, or whatever his name is.
This was pre-selfie selfies.
Right, exactly.
He must have had a tripod, because that's what you needed, and a timer.
Or just like a shelf, a nice shelf.
I guess a shelf.
To put that camera on. Yeah, a tabletop.
You need
like
some
that.
Outdoor pictures, that's what I was thinking.
You're right. Yeah. Right, that's true. But yeah, he's all over the country, including the Statue of Liberty. And this is when they're looking through all these photos, Ellen realizes that he looks lonely, which is impossible because he has no facial features to discern. Discern anything from.
But it is interesting though. It reminds me of how, like, when you take classes in editing or anything, like, they show you the power of how editing can be used effectively, like where you take the same image of a person, but then put a different clip in front of it, and then the reaction becomes whatever you're sort of like reading into it. Mm. And he does have that like blank face where you can kind of project
anything you
whatever
want.
You want. Mm-hmm. Onto it. And this reminded me that this was sort of a thing with Ellen where she would get hyper obsessed with something. This was something that happened several times during the show. We mentioned the dot thing earlier. That was another episode where it was just Ellen being super intense about...
She was like the dot of an eye or something in a word?
Focusing in on one thing and just having... and just becoming obsessed with it. This was like one of her character traits.
She's great. So she decides they're going to be his friends. So they see him and they say... why don't we all hang out? Why don't we all be friends? And he's very standoffish, doesn't want to be friends. Like, no, you know, it's okay. I just have to, wax the tasty mobile, which is what I call that ice cream truck from the show. What I call the ice cream truck from the show. You guys are dirty. And they're like, oh, we'll help you wax the tasty mobile. And you're welcome.
No,
and
no.
And And he's like, no, it's kind of a one-man job. And and so he
But they're like, we know just how to work that antenna. We don't care if it's a tiny TV, Mr. Tasty.
So he but he has the just the voice acting in this is great because you hear that in his like what is happening to him is that somehow these kids have messed up by like asking too many questions or trying to get close to him. It's like, oh, you ruined it and now I have to go.
Yeah.
And he says goodbye, kids, and he's gone for the summer. So the kids are all dying because it's, you know, I mean, literally they're just passing out. They're dead. No, they're not. All the kids die. End of the episode. That and that's what we did on our summer vacation.
We died.
Artie, the strongest man in the world, is on top of a water tower. He sees something and jumps off the water tower and lands at the photo booth and tells Ellen that he, at the curvature of the earth, could see a white, like shining, like gleam that was gone, and he knew that it was Mr. Tasty.
Right.
And that they had to find him. So they're tracking down Mr. Tasty.
Ellen figures it out with trigonometry.
That was awesome.
That was like, oh, thank great influence, Ellen.
Yeah. Nerd.
We disagree with your child.
That's why Ellen never gets with Pete, because she's smart. Everyone knows that. They're trying to track Mr. Tasty. He's traveling the country. They're always like one step behind him because you can't know where he's been till he's been there.
This was the other thing I needed clarification on. They are all over the country, right, tracking him down.
They're traveling the whole country, you mean?
Is that what's happening, or are they... How is she getting all these photos?
No, she just sees him because little Pete is standing on the high dive, so he can see
it. Oh, right, yes, right.
That's how you see
it. Also, and I honestly don't remember where this fits into the story, like what plot point this is, but they go to the beach, and they're at the beach, and their father has a metal detector. They mention it a lot in the 1 minute episodes that their father got a car in the sand that they just found it. Like, they dug it out and they just drove it away. And it's so absurd.
This is the most... I mean, it's like I said.
They start and they just drive off. Yeah. And there's no sand that's been moved on the ground.
This is what I mean about there's always... You always reach a point every episode where they just... It just... We're gone. All right,
this
we're
and,
off.
This and Artie jumping from the thing is like, what? Yeah. This
I mean,
great.
In retrospect, the Artie thing now seems perfectly like, sure, well, he's strong. I'm sure he could handle, his legs can handle the fall.
We should probably explain. You know, the father is at the beach and he's got a metal detector and he's looking for, you know, coins and things. He always thinks he's finding doubloons. He never does. But he does find,
Cutlass Supreme.
Cutlass Supreme. Thank you. Because he's thinking, maybe it's a Le Sabre. Maybe it's, you know, he's like going through.
Yeah.
And
that's how he met his mom. Pete's mom
by beachcombing like that.
Yes,
mom.
Pete's S apostrophe. The pizzas.
She has metal
pizzas.
Plate in her head.
Right, that's how we met.
And they came out of her vagina. Mm-hmm. That's why she's their mom.
Yeah,
got it.
How that works.
Okay.
Right, and they might. You know, might have been C-sections. You never know.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Maybe the first was addressed. Vaginal, and then the next was put like...
Because he was wearing the flannel. Yeah. It's hard.
Yeah, he had a flannel.
Can't deliver that.
That big winter hat. But, anywhere.
With that moment, and he came with Artie, which was weird. no. He didn't...
After waxing
Artie.
Mr. Tasty.
Yes. So I just like that moment because it's so absurd. Mm-hmm. And
that's my favorite part.
And you're just told to not question that at all. Yes. And no one is surprised that it happens.
No.
Like, oh, we found a car. Great. Let's drive off.
I love it because it's one of those things that if you saw this when you were 10 and then, you know, when you're 18, somebody says something that reminds you of Pete and Pete and you're like, I think I just invented a memory.
Yeah. Yeah. They dug up a car.
They dig a car and they drive off in it. But that could not happen.
No one else on the beach is even surprised by it. They're all still like sunbathing. Okay, so that long story short, they find they don't find Mr. Tasty, and the summer is ending, and Mr. Tasty shows up to get his photos that he never got, developed. So they talk to him, and they're like, "What up, man? Where you been?
Tasty.
Where you been at, Tasty? Where you at, son?" He's like, "You know how it is." No, but they're talking. you know, hate is going hate. just being tasty. Tasty being tasty. But basically, they never find out who he is.
I loved. I really thought it was going to build to that. And I loved that it
does. Then you never find out anything about his backstory. Yeah. You never find out, you know, they, you know, he says, you know, you're my friends, but they're not going to hang out ever. No. Like, he pretty much, this is it. And he takes, you know, they're like, they go to Wax the Tastymobile as a group. And then he wants to take a photo with them, which, sweet moment. But as an adult, grown ice cream man says, hey, kids, would you mind if I took a picture of all of us? Yes. And they're like, yeah. And then you whisper the word, great. Creepy.
No.
Automatically.
Do not take that photo.
What is he doing with that photo?
No.
Mr. Tasty drives off, but he's made three new friends. Mm-hmm. And that's the end of the summer. But it's also kind of, in at least when I was watching it now, it's also kind of the end of some sort of era. Like in Pete's life, the older Pete, not younger Pete. Younger Pete's got his whole childhood ahead of him. But older Pete is definitely like seeing, like, you know, the passage of time in his life and noticing that things, you know, are changing and the myth of Mr. Tasty is gone. And and that is what I think I liked the most about this episode is that it's about transitioning.
Well, I also love that it doesn't, you know, a lot of shows, when they wrap up whatever the message is supposed to be, I mean, they really want to make sure you get it.
Yeah.
And
the moral was,
in this show, really that is so rare. Like, it kind of, a lot of times as a kid, it would end and maybe don't really sort of know what you were supposed to take away from it, but you knew you felt something. Like, there was and that's so much, so much better. Like, I love that even as an adult. I think that's why this still works as well as it does as an adult, is that the ambiguity of a lot of it and just how open a lot of it is left.
Well, and really after your childhood, like, really once you've gone through, like, puberty, the rest of your life is basically transitioning. Like, for the rest of your life, you're always
going in a transitional phase.
You're going in a transitional phase. So
one's going to fix me juice ever again.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No one.
Until you're 90. No, you're just skin puddles, and someone's like, oh my god, put clothes on and drink this
puddles.
Okay, Donna, which episode did you choose?
I chose King of the Road. And it was hilarious.
All right, and I picked. No, you're this, right, Donna. This is a great episode.
This is great.
You know what I like about it is, even though it does not, and it's strange that it's the first episode of the official series, because it hardly contains any of the elements that you think of when you think of Pete and Pete.
Yeah.
Like, Artie maybe shows up for, he's as they're leaving, he's on the overpass.
Yeah, he's just for a second.
But I mean, in terms of recurring characters or just even locations, I mean, this is,
it's really just the family too, which I kind of liked. Yeah. You kind of get to know mom and dad, which I think is great. Cause you know, they're really very like side characters in a lot of it, but I love this. So this episode is the beginning of the summer, or maybe sometimes summer vacation. They go on this like really long road trip. That's like, you know, the Peets are like, road trip.
To Hoover Dam, which I think the previous episode established is where he met their mom. Or where they went on their
honeymoon. Their honeymoon.
Which I think they, it was mentioned in.
If they're driving from, I was like, oh, they're in Washington. Washington to the Hoover Dam is actually a nice little drive.
Mm-hmm.
New Jersey to the Hoover Dam. Damn.
Also,
Hoover Dam.
They never get anywhere near the Hoover Dam. Like, they're driving, looks like they're just circling the same
until the credits,
stretch
so
of highway.
See the damn
dam. They never even get there. It's just the stock footage at the end.
Yeah.
But I thought this was a really great episode, and when I rewatched it the first time, I was like, oh my god, I'm totally remembering. You got a lot of mom in the plate, and she's like tuning in the different radio stations, not on the radio, but on her head.
Yeah.
And you see dad getting really competitive in this one, mm-hmm. and the Pete's. I don't know, I thought it was a great little summertime family episode. So
no, I love this too. I laughed out loud. You know, they've always got like the 30 seconds before the credits start, and it's just, this one is so random, where older Pete is narrating about how, you know, the vacation and how they do this every year. And then there's this shot, this long shot of like the station wagon's down the street and the camera is in like someone's front yard.
Yeah.
And you're watching the station wagon coming down the road and it's either got to go left or right, but it just keeps coming straight. Like yeah. it goes up and over the curb through someone's lawn. And then you hear the dad go, "I know a shortcut." Yeah. And then it goes to the credits. And it sounds like audio they pulled from a different scene and just threw in like right there. I laughed out loud. It was so random.
It's great. It's great.
A quick question before we get into this, because the episode after the opening credits and the opening theme song, which is the greatest theme song in the history of theme songs.
Polaris, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Polaris. There it is. There's a harmonica sound being played.
Oh, my gosh. Awesome.
And it's Little Pete.
Oh, yeah.
Little Pete's playing with a harmonica.
Out the window.
Just okay, holding so it.
That is what is causing that harmonica sound.
He's
okay.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure if we were supposed to understand that was happening
Such
or not.
Goofy little
so
kid.
What I understood.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. He's a great character.
Oh, fantastic.
Great character.
So Dad has three rules of the road. Never ask for directions, which now that you mention it, no, my father has never had to ask for directions in his life. And we don't really get lost ever. He's pretty good with a map.
You just meant to camp where you camped.
We did. the roof stacking is the big thing. You need to have a good roof stack, which we never did because there was only one child, so everything you need can fit inside of the car. And you make good time. The third dad rule, which we always made good time. My parents are on a road trip right now, and I'll bet you they're making good
time.
Great time.
I love, after the like harmonica stack, or the harmonica blow, like Little Pete, they see another station wagon, and Little Pete like heckles the guy. Mm. He's like, "Nice stack, buddy." Well, family's like, "Yeah, Little Pete."
Dad's like, "He can't go to the Hoover Dam. Hoover Dam's not meant for people like
him." Yeah. He's not good enough for that. God. Yeah, that was crazy.
Oh.
And his license plate says King O' Fraud instead of King of Road.
Get the King O' Road. King O' Fraud. So they decide to pull over because they're making good time. And that's where Pete sees, they meet this other family. And older Pete is so struck by this dream girl.
Mm.
Well, I couldn't decide if she was pretty or not.
Yeah.
I was like,
guess. That's a great way of putting it.
You're kind of like low budget Nickelodeon
really pretty. But I think she looks like she's up to no good, which made her unattractive to me.
In the way like those plotting. Duggars, the Duggar family she's is. The same way.
Duggar.
Also, as a guy, if a girl's immediate reaction to you taking off your shirt is, and done with you, not the girl for you.
No.
I'm repulsed by your body.
It doesn't start that way, though. They start just, like, walking around, which she goes right with him. I don't know. Do you guys ever have, like, try to, like, pick somebody up when you were a child on vacation?
Excuse me.
You did that guy, the creepy guy, right?
Yeah, you tried to pick up
I was trying to...
No, you did. You were literally trying to get picked up by...
This is a dangerous thing to make... Cannon?
Let's see if he touches us. I'm going to strut in front of him. He did.
It was entrapment.
A Sean Connery movie.
Yeah. I wasn't trying to pick him up. I mean,
you were trying to get picked up.
Inadvertently.
Not to get my rocks off, but just sort of like, aha, I knew it.
Put me down. Okay, you're not going to put me down.
Right. Yeah. Oh, you're much bigger than me.
Oh, no. It's not going how I planned.
Overestimated my own strength.
Okay, I caught you. You can stop.
Please stop. Ow. Okay. Back to Donna. Donna?
So the parents decide they're going to, like, sing some songs in the car, and that wasn't really that part anyway. But, so they pull over, and bug juice for everyone. Do you have bug juice?
I've heard that term.
That's like a camp, like when kids come back from like sleepaway camp, and they're like, "Oh, we're gonna drink bug juice." And it's like, "Okay, it's Kool-Aid. Just say Kool-Aid." Yeah. Well, that's not what we called it in like Thicket Cabin. Shut up. I went to a sleepaway camp once, and we did not come back saying things like bug juice. I just hated when kids did that. Mm. There was an episode of Full House about it.
I'm pretty sure there was a reality show. I think it was on Disney. It was called Bug Juice. It was about camp. Our summer at camp was maybe the subtitle of it.
I just went to Jesus camp. So when we came back from camp, it was like, I'm worried about your soul.
Did you go to Jesus camp?
I did.
Did you really?
For several years, yeah. Mm-hmm. Of my other friends who are like really traumatized by it, but I had a good time. I had a great time.
I went to a camp that was through Catholic Charities. Mm-hmm. Was not, I don't remember being like overtly religious, but I was probably like almost definitely for kids who were like going through like divorces and stuff like that. Right. That's what I feel like it must have been, or like who needed some sort of counseling that Catholic Charities provides. Mm. And we went to that, and it was so hot. It was the summer of like 95, if I'm not mistaken. It was hot. It was like,
yeah. That summer. Yeah.
Well, it was a hot summer.
And I was in camp that summer.
There was no air conditioning. Obviously, you're like in a cabin or whatever. Finally got home after like the week that we were gone or whatever. Mm. Maybe it felt like a month. We were gone maybe like a week, maybe 10 days or something. Got home, went to enjoy air conditioning. Blackout all of Logan Square. No. I'm talking like all of Logan Square. We were walking down like Milwaukee Avenue looking for any place that had air conditioning. Mm-hmm. And I think we eventually like went to like the McDonald's, I think had their own generator, but everything else, like everything was shut down. Okay. And yeah, it was bloody hot. Like people on like our block died from the heat.
It's weird to hear you use British slang.
It was bloody hot.
Crikey.
It was bloody hot.
Can I guys, I have a camp story. This is maybe be like the worst thing I've ever said on the show.
No, you must say it now.
It's like, and not worse in terms of like vulgarity, but just this is the thing I feel worst about and everything I've ever said on this show.
He beat somebody up.
I was going to save this for like for the Salute Your Shorts episode if we ever did one, but since
the internet doesn't possess it.
Since that was at a summer camp, but as long as we're talking about camp stories. So, okay, I went to a day camp for a few summers in a row, and there were a lot of the same kids there summer to summer, so you got to know everybody. There was this girl named Anne who was just not well-liked. And this was the situation me and my sisters came into. This was established. We knew that Anne was not one of the popular campers. Everybody seemed to have... there were different reasons why people didn't like her. Mostly it was just, we don't like Anne because of the same thing. Other people came into the camp, and it was just this established thing. So I don't think there were, 90% of those kids didn't even know why they hated her. So because we were kids and we were shitty, we fell in line, and we didn't like Anne either, because that's just how what the dynamic was there. And I have to, and I should specify, I was pretty young. I was maybe like 10 or 11 years old when this happened. So one of these summers, a couple of the other kids had worked out this plan where they were going to get one of the other campers to pretend to be Anne's boyfriend. And then, just do the classic, like, ha-ha, fuck you, it was all fake.
So funny.
And just humiliate her, like, in front of everybody.
Every teen movie ever made.
Yeah. No, exactly. And so, but 10, like, we're kids. This is diabolical. Kids are the worst. Fucking awful. They're I'm still, worst. As a grown man, I am afraid of, like,
oh my God.
10, 11-year-olds. I'll cry, because, like, it's
brutal.
Just,
yeah they're brutal.
None of that, thank you. No. I'll just go on this side of the street. You that's terrify
the worst,
me.
That's the worst group in society, probably.
They're the only group that I still find myself, like, trying to be cool with. I'm like, I'm totally confident with other peer groups.
Yeah.
But with you guys, like, I really want you to accept me. Mm-hmm. Please accept me.
Well, it's because there haven't been real consequences to acting like a sociopath yet. Like, it's just, it's celebrated amongst, you and your friends. So,
oh, look, you're such a shit. Aww.
It's just kids being
it's
kids.
Awful, yeah.
No, you should get in there and fix that.
That's terrible.
That's not
going to
end well.
So they propose this plan, and somebody volunteers me as the person that should step in and do this. And because I just wanted to be liked by the other kids, I thought, all right, I'll get to be the big hero by fucking over this completely innocent person. So she had one other girl that was like friends with her and who also was not well liked just by her association with Anne. And so rather than going like straight to Anne, which I thought would be suspicious, I started talking to her friend first. And then once I was sort of, I got in good with the friend, then I started talking to Anne, hanging out with Anne, because there's a lot of downtime at day camp. Tons.
Yeah.
And, and I, it was just like these fucking shitty teen movies where you're kind of like, why does everyone not like Anne? She's great. She's fine. Great. She's just like everybody else here. And I did. I found myself like really enjoying talking to her. And so like we'd be off somewhere, like sitting under a tree and just like talking. And then other kids would be, you know, like walking by behind her and they'd see that, oh, it's just the two of them and like giving me the thumbs up. Like, oh yeah, fuck that bitch. Like, and I felt so weird, like about just like I know I have a mission here, but wait, am I really enjoying this? I think I'm actually enjoying talking to her, and just knowing that, you know, it was and then when there was like a hard deadline of like, okay, next Friday, that's when it's going to happen. And I should mention what it was, so not just the humiliation of, oh, you guys,
that's what I was thinking.
No,
it's pig's blood.
And that's when you found out that
this is real. This is not a funny story. This is not okay. So the plan was, there was this gigantic hill at the edge of this property, and the day camp was at like on a college campus. So there's this giant ass hill that we were all supposed to just kind of stay away from, because even the counselors thought it was too dangerous to play on or near or whatever. So I was supposed to take her over there to be like, Anne, I've got something I really want to tell you, or something like that. Or maybe it was for like a first kiss or something was the pretense. And then as we were standing there, I was supposed to get her as close to the top of this like hill as possible. And then two other girls were going to run up behind her, tie her up with jump rope, and push her down the hill.
Oh my God.
It's pretty vicious. Ugh.
And so I've got that big deadline of Friday hanging over my head, and I know it's coming. And it's just, meanwhile, she's like opening up more and more to me. And like, I remember we used to go, like on the rainy days where they take you inside to watch a movie, and they had like a proper movie theater on this campus, which was great. And so, but I remember like sitting in this theater and, like she started holding my hand during one of the movies, and it was like, I felt like I couldn't even at that age, I couldn't even articulate the complicated and conflicted feelings I was feeling.
Well, neither could Freddie Prinze Jr.
No, that's
he
couldn't.
No. Matthew Willard.
Can I tell you right now? It's a very different movie when it's 10-year-olds.
Yeah.
And then there was like, you know, I don't think that was like the first time I'd held hands with a girl, but I remember at one point she put like her leg over my leg or like just something like that. And that was certainly like the first time something like that happened. And I was like, it's a good thing it's dark in here because I don't want you to see my boner. Because just any skin to skin contact, like elbow to elbow, boing.
To this day, it's just like,
whoa,
hey.
All right. But anyway, so I was like, I was having a good time with her. And then that Friday comes and I am a despicable person. And it was more important, even though I liked Anne probably better than most of the other kids at that camp. Mm-hmm. At that point, probably much better than any of them, actually. Mm-hmm. Because it was more important to me to be liked by the masses, I took her out to that hill. I stood there and said nothing as the girls came up behind her, covered her mouth, tied her up, and pushed her down a hill while every other camper then came up running and laughing. And everyone was there to see this.
You're supposed to learn the lesson before the end of the movie.
Well, you should attend.
Yeah, those movies do not reflect my reality. I was a sociopath. And so anyway, so everybody, you know, the people and the girls that had orchestrated this in particular are cheering and celebrating. And there's a lot of like, you know, oh, Chris, you're the best. I can't, oh, you are. Because it was this long con. And like,
a really long con.
Yeah. And, well, I mean, even as a kid, you know, 2 weeks feels like an eternity. That's but it was something like a week and a half.
It's
it was something.
Huge relationship.
Yeah. And
yeah, it's a major fraction of your life.
And yeah, so I remember a couple of the counselors running over, screaming, like just disgusted with what had happened, and they go running down to get Anne. She is so embarrassed and humiliated, she just like walks off without looking at anybody. They have to take her inside. We don't see her for the and this is towards the end of the day anyway. People's parents are already shown to pick coming to pick them up and everything. She never looked at me. She never spoke to me again. Her friend had a few choice words for me, but that's pretty much it. And I was sort of like a hero for that afternoon. And then the next day, we were on to something else. Yeah. Everyone else was on to something. It was done. It was, and like, meanwhile, that day, and my, even my sisters were like kind of laughing about it. Mm-hmm. And then like that day, my mom picked us up, took us home. I went into my room, I shut the door, and I just started bawling. I felt so disgusted with myself. And like, and again, like too many feelings I couldn't even articulate and didn't really know how to process. I just knew there was like something in the pit of my stomach and like something I it was involuntary. I just shut that door and immediately started crying. And it like really, really, that's like one of those memories that like fucks with you as even more so as you get older, of just like, what was that about? Yeah. And it really changed, like going into junior high, there were situations with kids where people hated them just because, like, for whatever reason. I mean, it's so arbitrary when you're that age. And all of a sudden, you're that guy in your school, and what the fuck? Mm-hmm. And so whenever there was a that guy or that girl, because there were two or three that I can think of immediately from junior high, I just because of that whole thing with Anne, like, I'm not going to sit here and, like, paint a picture that I was some hero to these, like, you know, bullied kids or anything, but I never, ever, ever partook and that sort of thing again. And like, I never, it made me realize just how shitty it is to just like, to go along with that sort of stuff, to be a part of that sort of stuff, and to like, and how easy it is to forget that it's just like, that's a human being. Like, I understand it's a punchline for, you know, like the masses, but this is a human being. And this person has to go home every day and, you know, acknowledge like, well, this is what happened to me today. I thought I had a boyfriend and he pushed me down a hill and everybody laughed at me.
Yeah.
Like, that's...
it's terrible.
You know what I did not learn my lesson in, though, was tying people up with jump ropes, because the next summer...
that's still good.
The next summer...
somebody deserves it.
No, she didn't deserve it, but my little sister, Erica, I tied her up to with a jump rope. I tied her to the mailbox and then went inside. And then just watched from the window as cars would, like... cars would come down the street and sort of slow down.
Is that girl dead?
No, she's fine.
Should I help? And then they just keep driving. Nobody came out to lend a hand until my stepdad came home. It was kind of like, what the hell are you doing tied to the mailbox? So that, like, I knew I was in for it then.
That's
I'm
hilarious.
Hoping the mailman comes by and is like, are you? Should I?
Can I just hand this to you?
Just put
open
it
your
in,
mouth.
Put it in the thing. It's fine. I'll move my hand.
That's hilarious.
Oh my gosh.
Sad story.
You have no idea how badly I wish that my story ended with me realizing I would rather have just stayed friends with her and had everybody at that camp hate me too.
Yeah.
Because the, you know, having whatever that approval was, like, again, like, it was, I was cool for a few minutes that afternoon. The next day, it didn't matter anymore. We were on the next thing. It's so fleeting and so worthless, and it is not fulfilling. Yeah. And maybe that's what and the thing about that age too, is in terms of like, not being able to celebrate people's differences, because just a couple of years after this is when it really kicks in hardcore, like the sense to like of self-expression. I think it's sort of most like vibrant like through junior high and into high school, where so much is about so definitively standing out from the crowd. But you're just not there yet, and because it is easy to be like shitty and judgmental, because most of the things in your life up to that point have fit very nicely in a particular box. It's just,
I think if I got picked on for anything, because mostly I was always able to make kids laugh, so like I never
You're so funny.
I mean, thanks. I grew up in a, like, Logan Square now in Chicago is a great neighborhood. It was not a great neighborhood in like the 90s. It was very like gang affiliated, and So I grew up around a lot of gangbangers, like at the park that I used to hang out at and stuff like that. But they never like messed with me because I could make them laugh. And so that was always like my out. But if I ever got picked on for anything, it was because I wasn't trying to act older than I am. You know, like kids, like especially like it resonates in your story is like you were acting like things you probably saw in like any like stories that involved teenagers.
Yeah.
Like, it sounds and so, like emulating something.
Yeah. I always find like kids, like the most annoying ages for kids for me is like 7 to 10 years old because they're kids who are like too old that like the stuff
they're not cute anymore.
They're not, like the stuff they used to get away with is not cute anymore.
Yeah.
And they're trying to act older than they are, but the only way they know how to do that is from what they know from television.
To be like snotty.
Yeah. And to just repeat like archetypes and plot points from stuff that they've seen on Disney Channel and Nickelodeon, all the tween stuff, which is just, you know, reinforcing all this like nonsense, like the stories you're talking about.
Dumb, empty.
Right.
Yeah.
And so like that's that, I think that's where that comes from. As a kid, I played with action figures till it was probably maybe too late for me.
Oh, same here.
Yeah. And like I was very much like I was probably the last kid in my like grade school class to like kiss a girl, or the girls probably didn't kiss girls before me. They probably kissed girls after me. But yeah, I mean like by the time I had kissed a girl for the first time, there were probably sexually active children in my grade school. Like that was probably true. Like, and so I was always like a little bit behind in that, but like I wanted to be, like I very actively wanted to stay a child as long as I could. And like sometimes to like the, you know, whatever cool kids that like some of them were like, are you special needs? Like, what's your problem? Like, why don't you want to pretend that you're 30? Because I'm 9. What is your problem?
Let's
play with these Ninja Turtles.
Smart. I mean, that's really... Because everybody you just want to push. You just want to be like, oh, I'm only 9, but people think I'm 15. No, they don't. They don't think you're 15. No. You wish you were 15.
Isn't it funny how you... Because I was into, you know, action figures and some of that stuff maybe a little bit later than I should have been too, but I mean the suppression of that, like trying to hide that from other people, starts so young. To pretending you're not into the things you're into, and then it's so weird. It's weird that we don't try and correct that, because as you get older, it is so strange to me that the things that I think make people interesting more often than not, the things that you think when you think about a person and go like, oh, that's a cool guy, or that's a, you know, that's a cool girl, the stuff you're thinking about, the things that make them cool are probably the things they were teased for. I remember when, you know, I've told a lot of stories on this podcast where, you know, I was kind of a shitty person, or I did whatever. I was also bullied too. I mean, I had, you know, I had a pretty normal experience in that way. And I remember in junior high when word got out that I was making Batman movies, you know, in my basement and in my backyard with my friends, and we were dressing up. And I had friends stop speaking to me because they were like, how dare you let that information get out? I'm ruined. You've ruined me, sir. And like just walking down the hallway and having everybody like yelling things at me and all that. And it's just like, I just wanted to make movies, and I still liked Batman and comic books. And like the stuff that, you know, people give you shit for usually winds up being the stuff that makes you who you are later, and what people celebrate about you. And it's just so weird that what a large chunk of our lives where we're made to feel like we need to suppress all that.
It's a very strange culture that we live in. And that, how can you get kids out of that pattern? I mean, it's a huge...
I think it is just part of growing up. Because there's just some, especially the junior high age, it's sort of like the height of insecurity in terms of, I don't know who I am, what am I? You're just trying to figure stuff out and figure out who you are, like
and
away from your parents.
Coming
and,
in?
Yeah.
While it's all happening.
Where you're like, system of a down strange. Totally defines me as a person.
Sure. And it just, but it's easy to lash out at other people because I think that's when you're maybe the most insecure and the most. I remember. And sharp contrast, I remember my very first day of high school, like as a freshman, and the first day of senior year. And I remember walking in like senior year And you got the routine down. Mm-hmm. You know, the school, you've got your friends, one more year and you're out of there. And you just, and it really, you feel how small the school is because now you're thinking about what's about to come next. Mm-hmm. Am I going out of state for college? I mean, this whole world's about to open up. Mm-hmm. This place now feels very small. I'm aware of how small potatoes all this is. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, you've got the freshmen that are coming in, and it's just, there's the difference between people that, through their posture, through their walk, through their mannerisms, the way they talk to you, that are just cool because. And then there's all the people that are kind of like through their demeanor that are sort of asking, I'm cool, right? And that's what that age is. That's what that shitty age is, where everything is just like, this is cool, right? These are the, this is the band we listen to. These are, this is the movie that we like, right? We're cool. I'm cool. It's just, yeah.
Yeah, that's the hardest thing, just learning to just be yourself. Yeah. That's all you have to do. Just be that.
We all still secretly play with action figures, right? No. Don't. Me neither.
I remember the day, the last day I played with action figures. I had them all spread out on my bed, and it was like this big deal where Black Suit Batman had to put his blue and gray suit back on and take that one out.
That's
and
a big deal.
It is. It was a huge deal. aesthetically, this is what's he saying here? And and I remember I was like making the noises, the explosion noise, and the fire was like, pow, pow, pow. And I looked up and my mom was standing in my doorway with like a laundry basket and just kind of staring at me like, And that look, that was like, well, done with this. Uh-huh. Under the bed you go.
Yeah.
Mine was,
bye, guys.
The last time I played with action figures was because I ended up, I had a toy room about the size of this room. Like, just toys everywhere. Action figures everywhere. It was never kept clean. And actually, it was like, basically, it was for me and my brother, but it was really mine. Like, my brother didn't play with the toys, like, because I was playing with them. But I could leave them set up and continue the story when I came back from school tomorrow, you know, and so, but eventually when it was like time to get my own room, that toy room became my bedroom. So that's when all the toys left. And that's the only reason I ever stopped playing with action figures. I'd probably still be playing with them.
Well, that's the great thing about having kids is.
Oh, yeah.
Start buying toys.
It's the best.
For your kids. It's so much
fun. I have been looking like for Frozen action figures to give my kid.
Yes.
They're expensive and they're not going to happen. Yeah. But. No. But yeah, I can't wait for action figure times.
It's awesome.
Yeah, it's great.
I think the only reason I stopped playing with my Barbies so much is because my friends would come over and we would still play with them, but all the Barbies ever wanted to do was have sex. And I was like, okay,
you got to that age.
Feel like whores now.
I remember
my Barbies have
made them unclean.
That I not play with them anymore because they're like, we are not that slutty actually.
You have to channel so much like energy and imagination to create that story, sort of like taking water and making electricity, which is what they do with the Hoover Dam.
Perfect. Yeah. Let's Let's try and fly through these.
That was what, the 2 hours
sort of quickly.
So they have the other family. They start competing, and the Pete's dad is like, "Oh my God, we got to get back on the road." There's this other family who has the actual license plate that says "King of the Road," and mine just says "King Fraud." And then so they get back in the car and they jump and they're driving and driving and driving. And dad's so stressed out, and they're like, "No, we lost him. We totally lost him. It's fine. It's fine." But they have to pull over because Pete has to pee.
Now again, every episode reaches a point. Where we go completely off the rails.
This is the moment. There's another doozy towards the end, but this is like so awesome. Because the boys go pee really quickly, and they're like, "This is the thing about your mother and girls that you know she just has to search for the perfect spot."
Mm-hmm.
And this I'd forgotten, but this is the mom's shot in the opening credits. Is her trying to find a spot to pee?
Like Sound of Music style.
It's so awesome, and it takes her like all night
because all of a sudden it's nighttime.
It's nighttime.
And he has to shoot off a flare.
Your mother. Like, so great. So they finally come back, but the other family has caught them. And so now they're in a dead heat racing, and they're both going to make it there pretty much at the same time, which means the ultimate test of the King of the Road is going to be the stack on top of the car, who has the highest stack. Mm. So both of these fathers, while the car is moving, just hand the wheel over to their wives, and they climb on top of the car and
heighten the stack.
And they'll like hit the hood of the car or whatever, and someone will just hand them something else out the window.
Amazing. And very dangerous. Very dangerous. Don't do that.
But they run out of stuff to stack.
They run out of stuff. Yeah, everything's out of the car.
So it looks like the other guy's won, but
he's got like a big statue on top. No, but so Pete starts taking off his clothes and they all, and then Pete goes up on the roof, doesn't he?
The Pete?
I don't know that they. I don't know that they show. You guys are my favorite family.
Yeah.
Or like the best family I know, or something like that. That's good. They're your family.
Okay, so for our final episode, I picked Hard Day's Pete, which I think is the last episode of the first season. And this one centers around Little Pete running Wart Radio out of the garage. It's the garage, right? The basement. Or because there's the guy, the electric...
The meter checking, guy.
The meter guy. The yeah, so it must be the basement. And Artie, strongest man in the world, is doing news updates. I love how the system is... He's got the walkie-talkie with the... You know, just taped down so it's always broadcasting, like super low tech. But he's got like professional jingles. And so the thing about Wart Radio though is that it's all talk. There's no music because Little Pete just never had a favorite song. He's just not really into music in general. So his math teacher calls in during his show one day, and the math teacher's name is Cooter Fingerwood.
Yes, it is.
It's Elma.
Cooter. Elma Cooter Finger. Elma but Cooter I'm focusing on the
they call her Cooter.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Cooter Fingerwood.
Yes, Mrs. Fingerwood.
This is. I mean,
and Miss Fingerwood.
Thelma Pussy Dick. I mean, it's like it's the weirdest. It's just a symbol vulgar.
I mean,
things
they know their audience, which is kind of brilliant. Yeah. It's like, what are you talking about when you're talking about you're like. Yeah, Cooter Butts and Cooters.
My math teacher's name is there was Beaver Knobslob.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. There was a character called Cooter on Dukes of Hazzard. We were just talking not too long ago about the fact that there was a character named Boner on Growing Pains.
Yeah. I mean...
But anyway, so Fingerwood is played by Sid Straw, who she started out as a backup singer for Pat Benatar. But she's like an actual legit musician. She was in a band called Golden Palominos. Oh, yeah, this is going to factor
in
later.
The guy who plays the meter guy is also a musician.
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
I looked him up, too, because when he started playing and singing, I was like, oh, you can do this, too.
Okay, well, so she says, you better get to class. And so he takes a shortcut to try and get to school on time. On the route he takes, he hears a band playing. Watches them for a second. And it is. It's Polaris, from the opening credits. Sort of the house band of Pete and Pete. And so Pete is struck by this song, rides off still humming the tune. He goes back later to try and find the band. Nobody's there. Nobody's at the house. All that's left is this guitar pick. So searches and searches, but this song only exists in his head. And so then he figures that the only way I'm going to hear this song again is if I learn... to play it. So Little Pete starts playing guitar. Great, I love the scene awesome. Where he shows Big Pete how the feedback on the amplifier forces his belly button in.
Yeah, I remembered that. Whenever I see an Audi, I think of that.
That's amazing.
I think of that. And I couldn't remember where it was from, but now clearly it's Big Pete.
Well, and then an E chord, a low E chord, blows the lint out of your belly button. Which for a second I thought, did he just blow his belly button out?
Which is really weird.
Oh, God.
Really weird that his innie got lint in it so quickly.
Right?
And also, how does he reverse that process that he's able to show him again?
Oh.
Once he discovered it once.
Oh, gross.
Ugh.
Oh, and then the whammy bar is like kryptonite to Artie, which is also hysterical. So eventually he learns the riff, or approximates the riff of this song, and now he needs a band to play the full song. And so this band of his debuts on Wart Radio. He's got Finger Blowhole. What's her name? Cooter Pussywood.
Finger Banging.
Futter Butter Butter Dirt Dirt Pity. Finger Bang. God.
Finger Bang Me Hard.
Finger Bang Me. No. Yeah, Cooter Bang Me Good. This is
Cooter Bang Me Good.
This is so stupid.
Yes, Miss Bang Me Good.
Cooter Fuck.
When I was in the writing program at Second City, we had this kid in the first level who was younger than all of us. So we were all late 20s, early 30s. He was like 19. He was very young. And all of his sketches involved names like this. And he, I will never forget that it was a sketch about an employee and a manager. And the manager's name was Mr. Smelly Farts. It's like, why not? And all of the women in all of the sketches were named Karen.
Wow.
Yeah, all of them. And we laughed anytime we heard the name Karen, because Karen's such a great name.
All right, well, Beef Curtains McGillicuddy is on base.
Beef Curtains.
The meter guy, the guy that was checking the meter.
Mel.
Oh, right, right. Okay, he's on lead guitar. And then, yeah, the other guy on...
The kid
with the sideburns, the massive so sideburns cool. on this 9-year-old.
Chops, and he's playing
Thunderball, do they call him?
Yes.
Thunderball.
He's playing a full set of drums, but it's just one snare. He's playing a stand-up snare. But when you hear the drum, he's like, that's a full set going?
So these are the blowholes, and... The rest of the band wants to play a different song, because Little Pete's just insisting on jamming on this one again and again. And so he relents, and they bust out this, like, punk rock tune. The line where he's... So then Dad comes on Wart Radio to explain to Little Pete how he can't pay this electric bill anymore, and if the band... You know, that he can't let the band practice there anymore. They can't play there because he can't afford it.
Isn't this part of the International Adult Conspiracy?
Yes.
Which I think is the first episode that we watched that they bring this
yes.
up. But it's across the board. And there's always an International Adult Conspiracy.
Which is sort of how it feels as a kid, too. Yeah.
I'm a part of it now.
And I love the line that starts this scene where he has his dad on Wart Radio and he's like interviewing him. And the interview question you hear him ask is like, so coffee, you hate the taste, but you drink it anyway. And like, I remember being a kid having these conversations, like, you know, I remember being in my grandma's kitchen and everybody, she's making coffee for everybody. And just like, but it's so bitter. And like, but why do you guys like, you don't really like, look how much shit you have to add to it yeah. to consume. Why are you doing this? Mm-hmm. I like orange juice. I don't have to put anything in it.
That's what I always tell people.
The way it is.
That's what I always tell people who like with like the college drinking. Like if you need this many games to justify drinking,
yeah.
you don't like drinking.
No.
You like games. Play games.
Just do games.
Just play games. Just play it's actual fine. Like ping pong.
Yeah.
Well, now I am also in the adult conspiracy because I do love yeah. coffee.
I do too.
I kind of do it's like great. The taste of it. There are some nights I get excited games. About going to bed because I know I get to wake up and make
yeah,
coffee.
Yeah. I'm excited for my morning coffee.
When I
hey, kids, buckle up. When you hit your 30s, shit gets intense.
Boy, is life fun.
I tell like if I wake up Amanda in the morning, she's usually angry with me for waking her up. But if I say, the coffee's ready, like, the first thing out of her mouth, you're the best. And then I tell her I'm lying, but get up.
Get up and fix it.
It's kind of like a verbal coffee. Pushing down the hill.
Oh, gosh. But yeah, so Dad can't afford to let them play there anymore. You know, looks like all hope is lost. And then Big Pete calls in a request and says, if you play this song, I'll give you $5. Mm. And then so if, you know, the rest of the neighborhood, if everybody keeps calling in requests, the band will play these songs for $5 a song to raise the $700, $800, whatever it is, for the electric bill.
Which is an insane electric bill.
Yeah.
$700.
Well, there's even...
And they know every song.
Yeah.
They are an awesome band, it turns out.
There's the dedication to Mr. Tasty, sung by sung by the math teacher, which is the callback. It was just so crazy that we happened to choose the episode where...
It goes out to Mr. Tasty, wherever you are.
And this comes at
which
the...
Which means they never saw him again.
I mean, the fact that they're calling back to something that isn't even of the beginning of this season, but something that happened before the show even started proper. Like, that's
They just
so
acknowledge
great.
The mythos of
yeah,
the show. Yeah,
that's yeah.
awesome.
And then, yeah, so here's the moment where this episode veers into total absurdity. And this is, unless I'm reading this wrong, like, it seemed like Artie... When the one guy's like, okay, well, I can stump you because you'll never know
the
to play
Fred
this.
Hurley.
Yeah.
Fred
I'll give you, like, way. The rest of your money or something like
right.
that.
The whole time they're driving this neighbor guy crazy
right.
with their rock and roll. This is, like, the quintessential, like, MTV adult who's like, no, kids, on your music.
He's George Wendt.
And the Michael Jackson
yeah.
yeah. And so he said, yeah, if you can't play this song, you got to shut the whole thing down. Mm. And then Artie saves them by jumping in and creating surf music out of thin air.
Yeah.
Like, just by dancing, he makes the music. Okay, so that is what happened.
The strongest man in the world. Comes with other perk powers, too.
That's amazing. Yeah, that's...
No,
okay.
No whammy bar.
So that's how... And then, yeah, so they raise the money, they pay the electric bill, and that's kind of...
Fred Hurley's thrilled. He loves the song.
We should also say that the song is fleeting, right? So he's only remembering less and less of it. And
it's kind
of
down until it's gone.
Like a note. He remembers one note from the song, basically.
And this is... So the reason I picked this episode is that... So I started playing guitar when I was 13, but there was a build up to, you know, the whole idea of being into, you know, playing, the idea of being in a band and playing an instrument. Yeah.
Okay.
Not as well as I used to, but I mean, in general. But so, this was not the reason I wanted to start playing guitar, but this was in the mix. This is one of the things I saw as a kid that was kind of like, oh yeah, that'd be cool. That would be fun. And yeah, music was such a big part of my life for so long. And so that's why this kind of stuck in my mind. And then also just now, like, my band is back together and making an album. And so music is suddenly a very big part of my life again. And that was another reason I ultimately chose this one. And the thing about this episode is what I thought this maybe was building towards. And it's not about this exactly, but I think this sentiment is still sort of in here somewhere, is like, so I have very complicated feelings about, nostalgia, and I realize that runs in direct contrast to this show even existing.
The entire idea.
No, but this is exactly what I'm about to address, because I do think, like, you know, Pete gets very wistful about this particular song, and I like that the reason he picks up a guitar is to emulate note for note something somebody else has done, and then instead winds up creating something original, you know, with that with his band. And so while I do think there is a value in looking back in general, I think our culture, and if you want to make it specifically about movies, we're at a really weird place now where it used to be that George Lucas couldn't get the rights to Flash Gordon or something, so he makes Star Wars. Or he's inspired by old adventure serials, so they and James Bond movies, so they make Indiana Jones. Mm-hmm. Now, we just make more Star Wars. We just make more Indiana Jones. Well, there's no new versions of these things. We kind of get locked in to... I mean, and I know podcasts like ours don't help the argument about, like, the infantilization of our generation and that sort of thing. And I do think there is something to that. I'm not going to say we're, you know, that we're not guilty of that to some degree.
But I feel like we're searching for the bottom of it. Like, why is this so important? Why is our whole generation hung up on, you know, whatever, on Pete and Pete? Or why, when you, if you don't know anybody at a party, you can come in and be like, Ghostbusters 2 is the best Ghostbusters, am I right? And a whole room full of people is like,
throw things at you. Yeah.
No, but I mean, but you can,
no,
but
get her out of
bring
here.
That stuff up. I mean, you could, people all over our generation are buying shirts with old movies on them, and the Goonies is like the biggest thing you can say. People are like, oh man, you must be cool.
No, I know. Well, and I mean, I think it's interesting the difference in, you know, our parents' generation, like, because when I think about my dad, who grew up into the same things I was into as a kid. He read Batman comics. Mm-hmm. He's the one who introduced me to Batman. Mm-hmm. He, you know, he was into all these things. But then his generation, it was more about, well, now I'm this age, and so that stuff goes away, and now I do all this other stuff. And I think to him, for a long time, he did not understand why these, why I didn't put some of these things to rest, why they continued to be such a big deal to me, or why I was still into that stuff. He has now come, you know, he's done a total 180 on that, and now is at a point in his life where he's actually taking great joy in going back and rediscovering things from when he was a kid, or just like buying a PlayStation and buying video games and being like, turns out I love this. Like, just so, I'm thinking more in terms of, because the whole, what you just said is the whole reason, you know, we're doing this, is it's fun to go back and look at these things in a different context. But there's, I'm thinking more in terms of when it comes to generating content. And that's, I have been guilty of this too, in terms of things that, like, in terms of creating it. I think sometimes I there is a value in looking back, but I think it's sometimes more important to just take what you love and do something with that love, to use it as inspiration to generate something new. Because for me, honestly, like, one of the things that I feel conflicted about with this podcast is I'm very aware of the ratio of things I am creating and putting out into the world versus things I'm criticizing or commenting on, mm-hmm. or, you know, talking about other people's right. hard work. And as long as the one number stays larger than the other, then I can make peace mm-hmm. with the fact that, you know, mm-hmm. I get on this mic and make jokes about 20-year-old movies and, mm-hmm. and meanwhile, but, you know.
Right.
I don't know. That's what I mean about having complicated feelings about it all. I got to a place a few years ago where I just sort of thought, like, there's probably just that there's more value in taking what you love and doing something new with it rather than emulating the same thing. Like, just going back to the same well again and again and again. Mm-hmm. So that's that was one of the things I really liked about this episode. And again, that's how I remembered the episode. I remembered the episode being more about that, and it's kind of not at all. Which, I mean, a lot of the Pete and Pete episodes are not really definitively about anything. Which was a nice
kind of a series of escalating absurd sentences.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, really quick then, final thoughts on The Adventures of Pete and Pete, Donna.
What a great show. I was trying to do the math and figure out when I can give this to my niece and nephew. Mm. Just put it on. Like, I don't know that I know what it means, but it's sure a lot more interesting than a lot of the cookie cutter stuff that is out there. That there's not an answer for everything. Sometimes things are just weird, and that's fine. Petes have weird friends, and they have, I mean, Artie, for God's sakes, just watch it for Artie. It's a delight. You know, I think it's an awesome show, and it's still really funny as an adult.
Yes, it is.
And if you have a parent that's anywhere close to our age range, like, you're going to have a great time watching this. But yeah, I think there should be much more stuff like this for kids. Kids are really, really smart, mm-hmm. and we dumb stuff down for them so much and make it so easy. Like, oh, get it? This is funny.
Yeah.
No, you don't have to do that. I don't think you should do that.
I really like the idea of a kid kind of being like, what was that about? And then like, yeah, what was that about?
I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm sure I did that as a child. I was like, I don't really know if I understand it, but I'm definitely going to keep watching it because it's doing something to me. Like, I don't know what that is, but I like it. So, I think it's amazing. Holds up really, really well. And watch it. It's good for you.
It's good for you, Carlos.
I loved about the show that when it was out, it wasn't mainstream enough that you could talk about it with anyone. Mm-hmm. So you just kind of had to internalize what was going on, which you could never do because it was an absurd show.
Mm-hmm.
If this show was released now, it would be a primetime, like, network sitcom.
Malcolm
like
in the Middle.
ABC. It'd be, like, The Middle. Mm-hmm. Or, like, you know, it'd be next to the Goldbergs or something mm-hmm. like that. But we watched this as children on afternoons. Like I think the new episodes aired on Saturdays.
Mm-hmm.
So this was, like, directly for children, but it was good enough that by today's standards, it'd be a primetime network show.
Yeah.
Which is insane. That's awesome that we had that era in children's television. Mm-hmm. And it sucks that kids don't have it today.
Yeah.
This informed my taste in comedy. I mean, like, I love Community, and Community is so much based in this type of humor, like this, you know, kind of absurd.
I bet Dan Harmon was a huge fan of Pete and Pete. Yeah, I would guess.
Right, yeah, exactly. How old is Dan Harmon? He might have written for Pete.
He's a few years older than us.
Okay, I was like, I don't know how he might be 75 years old. this show was way ahead of its time, but probably a lot of things wouldn't exist without it, I think.
Yeah. To me, it reminded me a lot of something like, and I know these are very different shows, but like The Wonder Years or My So-Called Life, mm-hmm. in that at the age I first saw them, they felt very of that moment, or maybe in the case of My So-Called Life, a little bit of the near future. Like, this is, that's what being a teenager is going to be like. And now both those shows and this show, I still think, you know, they're all great, but now you watch it with nostalgia, with like, it's got a sort of bittersweet quality, and it reminds you more of that moment in time rather than feeling like it is of that time. And, yeah, just all three of these episodes had these very specific, like, snapshots of moments or feelings that I remember vividly from being a kid. Mm-hmm. Stuff I haven't thought about in a really long time. And I really love that about it too. I think this is a great show. I think it holds up really well. It's still really funny. And I don't know if this is inevitable. You grow up and just sort of bemoan the fact that, like, oh, these kids today, they don't know what they're missing, and da 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 da. But it really does kind of feel like, I don't know what the current version of this is.
I can tell you that the current version of this is a cartoon. Like, the current version of shows like this is, like, there's a cartoon called Sanjay and Craig, which is hilarious. Adventure Time.
What's the one that's named something? Gravity Falls?
Gravity Falls is a lot like this. Yeah. Absurd. And challenging, and it works if you're a kid, and it works if you're an adult, but this was live action, and this was something that we don't have anymore for kids. It just doesn't exist anymore.
Mm-hmm. All right, guys, that's it for us. Don't forget, if you're a fan of the show, rate and review us on iTunes, and if you can find a way of referencing one of the running jokes from the show, we'll read that part of it on a future episode and give you a shout-out. You can also like our Facebook page to find out what we're looking at next and to share your own memories of these films. Follow us on Twitter at HDYRpodcast. Let us know if you have suggestions for other titles we should revisit, and we'll see you next time.
Hold on. This is going to get cut out because it's a hate crime.